Paddy Power and the Football Show, the greatest football partnership since Diofen Heskey.
Well, lots going on. One of those busy evenings, it turns out, in football. So the latest from Tala, Ireland 0, Sweden 1, the under-21s against Sweden this evening. It is half-time currently and Stephen Kenny's side trail. A turbulent, eventful 45 minutes is what we're hearing, but they have been outplayed by the Swedes for long stretches of the game. Ireland have one very good chance, but the Swedes have created the better chances, is what we're hearing from Tala. Meanwhile, Wales are 2-0 up against Hungary in Cardiff. Aaron Ramsey with both goals, which all means, of course, that Ireland will play Slovakia in the playoffs in March for Euro 2020. And the other big news, of course, this evening is that Mauricio Pochettino has been sacked, relieved of his duties. Not mutual consent, but sacked is what we're hearing. And the reaction from Spurs fans is as predicted, really. As a Spurs fan, unless we have a brilliant replacement lined up, and please, God, don't let it be Jose, this looks like a terrible decision. We've let our best manager since Bill Nicholson go. Unless Levy finds someone better and spends the money to match top teams, we will be a mid-table club again, just like we were before Poch joined. That's Dave. Brian in Dublin, disaster for Spurs. How are they going to find better in Pochettino? Do not tell me Mourinho. I would hate if he got the job. And Ray in Mayo says, it sounds like get your retaliation in first job from the chairman. The favourite for the job, and actually the overwhelming favourite, in so much as you can rely on these things, is Jose Mourinho. He is the firm odds-on favourite. And the next names are 3-1 Allegri. I'm not sure if he's already been ruled out. One of the lads outside said he may well have been. You've got Eddie Howe, kind of 11-1. Benitez is in the mix. Eric Ten Hag. Brennan Rodgers' name has been mentioned. Niko Kovac as well, Bayern Munich manager. I'd be surprised. His name is in the betting. Diego Simeone, 40-1. Anyway, they're all lurking around, but it's Mourinho who's the clear favourite. In a moment, Spurs fans, we will bring you Chris Waddle. He'll be on the phone. So that's on the way. First, though, a man who I'm sure has a better feel than most as to what's going on here. Martin Lipton, chief sports writer for The Sun and author of Spurs, The Glory Years. Martin, thanks for joining us. We weren't expecting this quite this evening. So Pochettino sacked, Martin. This is not a mutual consent job. This is sacked.
Oh, yeah, definitely sacked. Told that the board, it was a difficult day that they had to make the decision. I'm not necessarily sure that I agree with them, but there you go. It's been pretty difficult this season, let's be honest. They haven't played very well. There's been issues on and off the pitch. I think if they're going to do it, though, they should have done it earlier. If you know, it's now... obviously, the Champions League nominally is still alive and they need one win next week against Olympiacos to go through, but they're not going to win that, are they? And 11 points is a massive gap to make up and forth. Not impossible, with 26 games to go, but a big gap. And I think there'll be lots of repercussions and doubts and questions amongst everyone. And I'm not sure it's ideal at all. But it's happened.
It sure has. I mean, his record there has been really outstanding. I was just saying a moment ago, I kind of forgot who the manager before Pochettino was. And then you suddenly remember it's Tim Sherwood. And that's where Spurs were at that time. And you look where they are now, that's with the greatest respect to Tim Sherwood. You know, he's a Premier League medal as a player.
They still finished sixth under Sherwood. They weren't that bad.
Yeah, but it just doesn't feel like they were anywhere close to where they are now. I mean, their best league finish since 1963 when they finished second. Four consecutive top four Premier League finishes. That's with a wage bill sixth highest in the league, which is generally the best indicator. Champions League final thrown in as well. Things did go off a bit of a cliff. But is Pochettino, getting rid of Pochettino really the answer?
Not for me. I think it's a mistake. I would have stuck with him. I would have given him the chance to buy the players that he felt were needed to be brought in to change things around. I think he's been worried for more than 18 months about the players having basically been run dry by the way he gets them to play. And he wanted to make big changes 2 summers ago, not last summer. It didn't happen for a variety of reasons then, mainly the World Cup, actually. This summer it didn't happen because no one wanted them. And they've ended up with players that they didn't want anymore and players who knew they weren't wanted anymore. And it's all sort of fallen apart pretty rapidly, and that's a great shame. I don't think any Spurs supporter would argue that Pochettino has been an outstanding, or deny that Pochettino has been an outstanding manager. He's taken the club to the heights they dreamed of, in truth, and I never thought I'd see. To see Tottenham in the Champions League final was beyond my wildest expectations. To see them finishing in the top for 4 years running. Again, it's never happened in my lifetime.
Yeah.
So that's the measure of what he did. And given, as you say, the budgetary things he has to deal with compared to others, the wages being, as I said, the sixth highest, he overachieves every season. Lowest position was fifth.
Was there a relationship breakdown between Pochettino and Daniel Levy?
Well, it must have been at the end. I mean, all the way through, I'm sure that Levy didn't want to do it. I mean, Levy doesn't like paying money to anyone, does he? And he's going to have to pay some degree of compensation now, which he won't be have been wanting to do. I think it's probably just come down to results, and he feels that the decline, spiral of decline, has become such that Pochettino wasn't going to get them out of it. I'm still not sure. I think aggressive management, making it clear that certain players weren't going to play again, might have been the answer, but we will never know.
Because
the thing is that those players are still out of contract in 6 months' time.
Yeah.
Are they going to sign? Is Eriksen going to sign just to play for Mourinho? I doubt it.
I would doubt it too.
Or anybody else, for that matter. If they want, you know, him and Alderweireld and others, they want to go. They're going to go, irrespective of who the manager is.
Where this will get tricky for Levy is, as you've outlined it, two summers ago, Pochettino smelt danger for this squad and wanted an overhaul, and literally nothing is spent. You know, it's quite extraordinary. Two summers ago, nothing is spent. So how Levy explains all this away, that the manager with Pochettino's track record here is the one to blame, won't be an easy job, because frankly, it wasn't Pochettino's fault.
Well, I mean, there is an argument that the players have stopped working for him as well. You can see that. Look, the lack of press has been remarkable. A team that was always about hunting the ball down at pace, forcing errors, just stood off the ball frighteningly in many of the games this season. They've lacked the intensity from the very first game of the season, actually. And at some point, the manager's got to get it right. And he's kept on switching players, it seems, recently, without any clear benefit. He hasn't seemed to know his best team, which I don't think helps. If he was just changing the fullbacks, that'd be one thing. But he's changing players every other game, trying to get a result out of them. Yeah. And they are good players. You watch Winks and Kane this week for England. There's no doubt they're both fantastic players. And Winks has hardly had a kick in the last month. Kane has looked leggy and off. I don't know why that is, but if he can score 10 in 6 for England, no matter who you're against, he can't be playing that badly. And he hasn't looked anything like that sort of player, really, apart from, bizarrely, the game they got beat 7-2 by Bayern Munich in a Spurs shirt.
And, Martin, have you heard mumblings of losing the dressing room type stuff?
Well, it always happens when players start, when performances go down, and then they found it again when they start winning. I think certain players have stopped listening. Because that's always the way. You can only listen. You either change the manager every 4 years or you change the players, don't you? It's the nature of football, because after a while, and some managers last even less. I think, you know, if it is going to be Mourinho, the maximum you're going to get out of him is 2 years, because he just kills players in and out after 2 years. They want to run through a brick wall at the start, but they can't keep on doing it. The surprise, I think, in many ways, with Pochettino, was it lasted so long, given the sheer drive and energy and effort and intensity he puts them through.
I could not think of a more ill-suited chairman and manager than Daniel Levy and Jose Mourinho.
You might think that, but yeah, in fact, you're right. Maybe lepers do change their spots. I saw Jose and spoke to him in Milan, was it about 2 months ago, at the FIFA Awards. I have to be honest, and I'm not saying he should be the manager, because if I had to pick anyone, I'd go and get Brendan Rodgers personally, but I don't think that's going to happen now. He looked like a man who had lost 10 years in the space of 10 months.
Jose.
In terms of, he looked so much more light of mind, of body, the vitality was back, everything. He was so careworn at the end at United, and he didn't look that sort of person, so he was in definitely a better mental state, I would say, than he had been when he left United.
Yeah.
The trouble is, it doesn't take him long to get back into that old Mourinho way. When ever since he left Real Madrid, he's been convinced that the players are all potential enemies. Yeah. Whereas before he went to Madrid, he was convinced they were all potential allies.
Yeah.
And I'm not so sure that that's going to change.
No, I'd be surprised. About a month's good grace. And then I suppose the last point to put to you is Pochettino's future. I would think, amongst others, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has noted the news this evening.
Yeah, I would imagine that Levy will be absolutely desperate that Pochettino ends up at Bayern Munich and not at Manchester United, where he can come back to haunt him, because that would be the worst possible outcome. And I would not be surprised if that's where it is. If I was Ed Woodward, I would just dump Solskjaer now and ring out Pochettino.
And that's the final point to end on, isn't it? That Pochettino's reputation is nothing but enhanced despite the last couple of months.
Yeah, it's been a poor few months. But you look at the body of work over 5 years, and I defy anyone to say, given everything we discussed, that he's not been an outstanding manager for Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah.
And proven himself ready to do the next, take the next step, you know, to another big club, maybe one that has an expectation and a winning culture as well.
Mm. This could be a decision which haunts Daniel Levy. Martin, thanks so much. Appreciate it on short notice.
No worries. Take care.
Thanks again. Martin Lipton there, who's the chief sports writer for The Sun and author as well of Spurs, The Glory Years, 1899 to 2017. And we're going to speak in a few moments' time to Chris Waddle, get his take on things. Latest again, over in Cardiff. Well, it seems Wales are in control. Aaron Ramsey has scored their two goals this evening, 20 minutes to go against Hungary. So again, Slovakia calling for Ireland in the playoffs come March time. And good news from the Tallaght Stadium, Ireland have equalised against Sweden. So let's see who got the goal. Lee O'Connor has popped up to sweep the ball home into the top corner, says the feed I'm reading, and it's a great finish as well. So Lee O'Connor has scored for Ireland against Sweden, so it's 1-1 at the Tallaght Stadium is the latest we have there. Elsewhere this evening, Northern Ireland, they're 4-1 down away to Germany. Netherlands 3-0 up at home to Estonia. I know we have Chris Waddle on the line. I will just read out what Daniel Levy and the board said, by the way. We were extremely reluctant, they say, to make this change. Not a decision the board's taken lightly nor in haste. Regrettably, domestic results at the end of last season and the beginning of this season have been extremely disappointing, and it falls to the board to make the difficult decisions. This one made more so given the many memorable moments we had with Mauricio and his coaching staff. Chris Waddle is on the line. Hi, Chris.
Good evening.
Reaction to the news?
I mean, in the football world, I suppose people will say it's a shock, but we know it's a result business. Tottenham have had, you've got to say, he's done a very good job to get them in the top four. And he has done very well with the way he's turned the club around. Obviously, it's been difficult times with the stadium, cost a lot of money, so he's probably not had the finances, and obviously a few players run out of contract, which should have been sorted out last year for me. And it's been a difficult start of the season for them after obviously getting to the Champions League last year. But as we've seen in the past, you know, it's clubs look at it different from fans and from different areas. The club look at, they think they should be in the top four. They've got the training ground, they've got the stadium. And when you look at that squad, whether it needs freshened up or not, you've got to say that, you know, it got to a Champions League final, that squad, and also, you know, it was a top four team. So it's a disappointment to see where they are in the league. The performances have been, you've got to say, very poor this season. And as I said, it's a results business, and unfortunately for him, unless you get results at a big club, you go.
Yeah, I mean, he could argue he's made four consecutive top four finishes, and as you said, the Champions League final. And two summers ago, they spent literally nothing. And we just had Martin Lipton on there, who said Pochettino two summers ago sensed that the squad needed a bit of an overhaul. And obviously Daniel Levy can be tricky when you want to try and do that. And I do take Levy at face value when they say they were very reluctant to make this change. Not least, you know, whatever about his relationship with Pochettino, but they're going to have to pay him off the guts of £12 million, which I'm sure they would not like to do. So I just wonder, was it that broken, do you sense, when you were watching the performances on the pitch of late?
Yeah, I've seen a couple of games, I've been to a couple of games, and also I've watched them on the TV, and they just look as if the style of play, which is you know, when you play a physical game, a fitness game as such as well. I know they've got the skills and the ability, don't get us wrong, but Tottenham's game was all about playing, pressing and getting the ball back, and then obviously showing what they could do when they had the ball. And there was like a tempo about them which a lot of teams couldn't deal with. But if you look at them this year, it doesn't look like they're pressing, it doesn't look like they're dropping off. So they're caught in two mains, and they've given away silly goals, they'll give away a lot of chances. They've not really been creating enough. And then you've got, obviously, the situations with Vertonghen, Alderweireld, Eriksen. You know, and these are all, obviously, international footballers and good players, very good players. And they, you know, Eriksen should have went in the summer, simple as. You know, they should have basically pushed him out, and he wasn't going to sign. He said he wanted to go and play in a country. It was nothing about Tottenham, but he wanted to go and play in a different country. He probably thought Real Madrid and someone like that, Calabar would have come in for him. I don't think he's that level. I think he's he'd get a good club, don't get us wrong, but I don't think he was a Real Madrid or a Barcelona type player. So it's just dragged on. And you can see in his performance, he's mained you can say his main has been elsewhere by the looks of it. So, and as I say, Vertonghen, Alderweireld, Dele Alli's had his injury problems. And you know, what happened to Wanyama? He was a good player when he came and not seen, never featured. Listen, the stadium's cost a lot of money. We saw it with Arsenal. Arsenal were at the top. They built a new ground and all of a sudden they stopped spending as such. And they fade away. And who would have thought Arsene Wenger would have got the sack from Arsenal at one stage? Nobody. So that is football. It moves on. And unfortunately, if you don't take the team on and move them on with the club's development, then unfortunately you'll pay the consequences.
Yeah. And were you watching these performances of late where that pressing game had fallen off and thinking, these players have down tools a little bit?
Yeah, whether it's down tools or the legs have gone mentally, physically, I don't know. There was something not right, and it just doesn't look like Tottenham have, over the last two, three seasons, as you said, where they've been the top four. And they got the Champions League final. You know, the energy levels they had to get a result in Ajax that time, when everybody thought we'd done, finished, it was like Ajax were. They come back and clawed away, and the energy levels and the beliefs they had. And this season, it just looks like they've been, you know, 60% of what we've seen over the last two, three seasons. And, you know, as I said, unless they move on, and listen, if he's had his hands tied, I'm sure we'll get all excuses. I don't really think that Tottenham will be paying him £12 million to leave. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets into a job within the next 10 days or 2 weeks. Maybe it's been sat down and discussed, and maybe he's had offers elsewhere, which he's probably thinking, yes, I'll be looking at that, and maybe they've come to some agreement. We don't know the obviously ins and outs. They've obviously got rid of all the staff, so there must be something lined up for me in my eyes. We've looked at the betting. Mourinho is 1-8 on. If you want 8 on in my eyes, you've got the job. So whether it's been happening or negotiation has been happening over the last two, whatever, and if you look at it like that, then obviously they've said to Pochettino, and then he's been linked with a lot of clubs, you know, Paris Saint-Germain, Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, Man United. So I don't think he'd be short of offers, and I just wonder if they've discussed and thought, look, Bayern Munich want you, or so-and-so want you.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's actually thought, you know what, I'd like to go there, I'll do a deal with you. And I don't, listen, we all know Daniel Levy's a very good businessman. He runs the club really, really tight, and he's very good at it. You've got to say, I kind of see Tottenham paying out £12 million, I'm sorry.
Yeah, maybe not. I saw it from Nick Harris, who's often on the money with these things, but I do take your point. So Mourinho, as you said, is the firm favourite. Honestly, you, especially the type of football you like. You can't be excited at the thought of Jose Mourinho rocking up there to bore everyone to death for 18 months.
Well, this is it. I mean, he got sacked from Man United when he did very well. When you look at the result business and the trophies, the one he did well. But again, Man United fans thought, no, it's not our cup of tea.
And he also, there's like he creates the worst atmosphere with the media, with the fans. He turns the fans against the owner. It is like he wants war. You know, that's the energy he seems to thrive on as well. So it's not just the football. It's actually the atmosphere he brings.
It is. He can, he sort of gets everything. It's like he sort of sets his stall out to think, I want everybody to hear it and we'll prove it wrong and we get the results. I can sort of laugh at you. If it doesn't work out like that, obviously the club think he's got a bad image for the club and then he'll be moved out. If they are going for him, we know his proven record of winning trophies, but as you say, his football is very, very dour. In Tottenham, as a club who have been brought up on excitement, entertainment, I played there myself, I know what the fans want. It's very hard to keep winning that, but modern day football now, it's geared for entertainment and winning things. And look at Man City, look at Liverpool, they play unbelievable football. And you know, if you're going in there and Mourinho thinks I'm going to try and get 1-0, 1-0 every week, I think there's managers in the past being into Tottenham have done that and probably won a trophy, but the fans haven't enjoyed the style of play. Mm. They may put up, if somebody says, listen, I'll win you the league in 2 years' time and I'll win you the FA Cup and whatever, fans will put up with it because they want trophies. But as a pure Tottenham fan who loves and being brought up the style and how Tottenham have played, it's such a beautiful game. They'll not enjoy his football. No, definitely not.
No. And what we were just saying before you came on, geez, if ever there's a manager who wants to spend big money, It's Mourinho. So, I mean, how that's going to work.
Well, this would be... you'd find a lot of fans, I would think, would voice their opinion if he gets a big wad of money to spend. Because he would have said, well, why didn't you give it to Pochettino? Well, yes. Because he's been waiting for it. And you've kept obviously making excuses he can't have it. Because they haven't got it because of the debt to the stadium, which they're paying off, or whatever reason. If somebody comes in and all of a sudden has said, there's a big kitty of £200-400 million, then people are going to ask questions.
Yeah, I would think so. Other names, by the way, I'll reel off the list of names finally. You can give me one that jumps out at you in the betting. Benitez is there. Again, I'm not sure about the style of football, but Benitez is there.
Wouldn't enjoy his style, no.
Yeah. Eddie Howe is there.
Well, I'm a great thing with Eddie Howe that... you know, people say he's done an unbelievable job. I think he did to get Bournemouth up. But if people actually look at the purse strings he's had good purse strings for a club that size. And to stay in the Premier League, Tottenham are better than that. They want to do better than stay in the Premier League. So I'm not sure on Eddie Howe's credentials for all. He's bought a lot of players, young players in development, sold a few on, doing it as wrong. It's different when you go into a club expecting to win trophies and being a success. Where with Bournemouth, let's be perfectly honest, to keep them in the league, and he's got always had a good budget, to keep them in the league, that is his job.
Okay. Well, these are the other names very quickly. Allegri is there, Ancelotti is there, Brendan Rodgers has been mentioned, Niko Kovac, the Bayern Munich manager, has been mentioned, Diego Simeone, 40-1, and Erik ten Hag, and even Gareth Southgate. Is there any name that you fancy the look of?
Well, I like Ancelotti. I think he's been around. We know that but he likes to play. He likes to play exciting football, and he knows how to win. He's won a lot of things as a player and a manager. So, somebody like Allegri, we wouldn't know. Juventus were above everybody else when he was there, so it's hard to judge whether he could turn Tottenham into a Man City or Liverpool. That would be interesting. The names you've shouted out, I'd be probably looking at Ancelotti as a manager who could. An exciting style and has got the experience and the knowledge of how to win trophies.
Okay. Well, listen, interesting times as ever at Spurs. Chris, thanks a million.
Yes, mate. Thanks.
Cheers. Chris Waddle there, live on the line. Given his reaction to Mauricio Pochettino sacked at Spurs, breaking news this evening. Elsewhere, Wales still 2-0 up in Hungary, so Slovakia beckons for Ireland. And, oh, geez, look at that. Ireland from 1-0 down in the under-21s in Tallaght. 2-1 up, 65 minutes. Cracking goal by... Adam Ida with the goal for Ireland, similar enough to the Leo Connor goal who scored the first. So suddenly Ireland have gone from 1-0 down rather to 2-1 up at the Tallaght Stadium this evening. 65 minutes on the clock.
Paddy Power and the Football Show, the greatest football partnership since Diofen Heskey.
Now then, Kevin Kilbane joins us. You're there, Kev.
Hi, Joe. How are you keeping?
Yeah, very well. So a better performance and obviously a disappointing result is the general tone of the coverage. What did you make of the game? Talk to us.
Yeah, I think that's fairly accurate in that description, Joe. It was a better performance, probably the best performance, certainly at home, that we saw across the group. A lot of endeavour, a lot of guts, a lot of determination. And probably just lacking that cutting edge, that final ball, that finish that could have got the team over the line. But I think in general, I think there was a lot of positives from it. I think it's certainly something that you can take forward. It just seems now, if and when that playoff comes around, whoever it's going to be, it seems such a long time off now.
I mean, you look at the campaign, right back to that away match against Gibraltar, that 1-0 win, and then the win at home to Georgia, and then away to Denmark, 1-1. Another win against Gibraltar, the 1-1 draw with the Swiss, 0-0 draw with Georgia. The loss to Switzerland and then last night. You kind of wonder where some of those qualities we saw last night have been over the course of the campaign.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think that's maybe an assessment, and I'm sure that Mick McCarthy will probably look at that across the course of the campaign and maybe see that perhaps we didn't necessarily reach that level too often. The Georgia game at home, albeit we only won 1-0, I think that was an up-tempo performance. It was certainly... what you would describe as a front foot performance, on the front foot, closing down without the ball was very, very good passing forward. I think so often, I think probably as the campaign progressed from the start of that Georgia match, that first home game, we did probably go backwards a little bit in terms of how we played in passing forward, running off the ball. It seemed to be a little bit in a few of the games that we saw, maybe under Martin O'Neill, where we dropped very, very deep. We were probably going back to front a bit too readily, and no support was there. Whether it was McGoldrick or or Maguire, whoever it would be that played up front and took the number nine berth, Collins, whoever it was going to be, we weren't able to get into support because we were sat too deep. Whereas last night, I think we were a little bit braver. I think we stepped up and played further forward. And that comes from Shane Duffy and John Egan, certainly the first half, playing a bit further forward, being a bit braver. And I think that's why we got a better performance, because the midfield were able to engage a little bit more. We still lack quality, I feel, certainly in the middle of the park. I think that's been a real problem for us. We look at the lack of goals, yes, that is without doubt the major problem. But I feel as though the problem is maybe that willingness to take the ball and take responsibility in the middle of the pitch. But I do feel in terms of everything without the ball was very, very good last night.
OK, well, there's a few points in that. Let's stay with midfield for a moment then, which we always talk about, I think, when it comes to Ireland. It was very noticeable last night, unlike in previous games, that when Darren Randolph had the ball at his feet, and especially in the first half, often under a bit of pressure, there was a determination to try and play it from the back.
Yeah.
To the point, actually, that it wasn't all that comfortable a watch when they were doing it, because I don't know how, like, because I asked Mick this in the press conference afterwards, you know, were you happy to see them do this? Was this very much the plan, or was Partey thinking, Jesus, lads, get rid here? And he didn't love the question. He said, you must be winding me up. He said, of course we did that at my instruction. We practiced that all through the week. That was very much what we were trying to do. So it was very interesting to be in the stadium. And you can explain this to me, right? Because I genuinely want to put this question to you. Often when you're trying to compare Ireland to opposition, we don't try and play out from the back, and they do. But last night was interesting in that we did try and play from the back, and also the Danes did. Now, when the Danes do it, and the centre-back split and low-lying midfielder takes the ball, he turns around, he has options. He has two or three passes, and you think, well, I wouldn't mind being that guy, that looks okay. They are in control of the situation. When we did it, and this is the question, it was the two centre-halves and Whelan. And then you honestly had Harahan in some kind of weird inside left position 20 yards away from Whelan. And you had Jeff Hendrick practically playing as a second striker at times. And Whelan and the two centre-backs would almost play themselves back closer and closer to Randolph, and then they have to boot the ball away. We just didn't look comfortable doing that for a team which, according to McCarthy, had practiced this. Can you talk to us about what's going on there?
I think that's a little bit probably of nerves in the game, the occasion, everything like that as well. You can't overlook that. Something that I would always stress upon. But I probably agree with you on that assessment, that it was a little bit edgy when it was being done, when the ball was back at Randolph's feet, when he was trying to roll it into Glenn. Glenn wasn't necessarily taking it on the back foot. We were actually turning out. And it's a huge thing that I do think that it can be done if players watch the videos back from games. And the big thing, Joe, lads not taking the ball on the back foot. It's a continuation of always back to where, if you take the ball in the middle of the park, it's always back to where it came from. Condensing play. And you've watched enough football yourself, Joe. You know how it works. It's easier to press than that, because as soon as that ball goes backwards, the back four step 5 yards, or able to step 2 or 3 yards, a few yards, whatever it is, it helps the midfield engage and it forces the ball back. So invariably that ball is always moving backwards rather than actually forwards, and it always goes back to Randolph. So it's a long punt. Everybody's out of shape. We're not in them position to go and win the knockdowns or the second ball. And I felt as though that was the case when it was being moved across the back four at times. Whether it was in the first half, whether it was Egan and Duffy. Duffy actually did all right. I feel as though his quality is really improving on the ball. But too often, I think, when the ball was being shifted across the back four, it was always behind the player. So if it was Egan to Shane Duffy, for instance, it was behind him. So he was having to adjust 2 or 3 yards backwards. So his first touch then is having to go backward. Then it goes back to Randolph. Rather than played in front of him so he can step into the play, and then we're obviously on the front foot and we're going forward. I just think that it was just a little bit, I mean, again, you've probably been overcritical on it. I'd probably be overcritical on it, but it is finer detail. So it's the finer detail that probably makes performances and helps teams get further forward. But we were just a little bit negative in that, I felt, Joe, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's the difference between Denmark being able to play through the thirds and us ending up with Egan and Duffy practically on the Irish end line and Randolph having to beat the ball away. So why is Harahan 25 yards away from Whelan, and why is Hendrick halfway up the pitch? Because surely we want some kind of connection there between those three so that Whelan can get turned and have options. Like, for a team that had it drilled, I just didn't understand what was going on.
Well, I don't know. We've constantly spoken about this. Say, for instance, the only way that a lot of our listeners and viewers will constantly watch Premier League, and they'll look at the benchmark for building from the back as a Manchester City team.
Yeah.
Watch Kevin De Bruyne and David Silva, what they do when the centre-half splits. They go and play like centre-forwards. They try and stretch the play as far away as possible, so it leaves the holding midfielder, whether it was Rodri or Fernandinho. So what Jeff Hendricks and Conor Hourihan's responsibility is to try and stretch it away and turn it or free a fullback up, because the fullback then can get the ball, or Glenn Whelan can get the ball. The out ball has got to be Glenn Whelan. Mm. But I just felt that when Glenn Whelan was taking it, it was back towards Darren Randolph again. So again, in turn, with him taking his touch backwards, it just helped Denmark get up the pitch. Then that punt was invariably always going to come and be lumped forward. Mm. It wasn't necessarily, as you would maybe say, and I'd agree with it, it wasn't necessarily comfortable. And it kind of felt, I mean, you were at the stadium, I wasn't in the stadium, but it felt edgy watching it. Yes. It was like, oh, you know, it did. That's the way it felt. But I think the crowd may be drawn that a little bit when they don't necessarily see us playing that way regular enough, or it hasn't been regular enough doing that way, that edge is coming, just get it forward, lump it out. When there has to be that responsibility, I feel, and I don't think it was there last night, the responsibility, apart from Glenn Whelan, who I felt has taken a lot of responsibility through this campaign. I think he's been our best midfielder by a long way.
Yeah.
And I felt whoever's played alongside him, whether it's been in the three, like a holding midfielder alongside him, and a number 10 ahead of him, or as a three with two more advanced midfielders, I felt the combination ahead of Glenn Whelan has been pretty poor. And again, I saw it last night. I think that both Conor Hourihan and Jeff Hendrick on the ball didn't play to the potential, didn't play anywhere near the complaint.
The Hendrick thing now is a real problem. They're going to have to look at that, because I know Damien Delaney thought something similar at certain points, where how much did Hendrick want the ball? There were just too many moments where if he really wanted the ball, it was his, and I'm not sure he did. And he got a couple of early touches which didn't go well. I don't know, is his confidence shot or where is he? But like, that's now a big question mark. I think Hendrick really has to be looked at. And like, if you've got someone like McGoldrick and we're really going to try and play football, so the way McCarthy, you would think last night, told them to play, if we're going to have McGoldrick up there and we know he can hold the ball up, you need someone who can play around him. And look, in my dream world, it's Jack Byrne. Maybe it's Brown through the middle and Callum Robinson on the right.
But I don't think Alan Brown's that type of player, Joe. I don't think Alan Brown's that type of player.
Okay.
I've seen a lot of Alan Brown. Alan Brown is a player that likes to play off the shoulder of maybe a holding midfielder and get himself in advanced positions. He's not a playmaker. He's not someone that's going to take the ball with his back to goal and create. No, he's not.
Well, who and, then? I'd want Jack Byrne, but we need someone in there who can at least play with McGoldrick.
Yeah, well, I think he's still unproven at that level, isn't he, Jack Byrne? Yeah. So that's the thing, that we probably need to get some more game time into him, and hopefully that could be the case further down the line. He certainly, the one thing that has been notable about Jack Byrne and his two caps has been how demanding he is of others. I don't see that from our midfielders. I don't see anyone demanding the ball from fullbacks, from each other in midfield. In fairness to Glenn Whelan last night, there's a couple of occasions where, and I don't think we've done it anywhere near good enough. When the ball was played into him from a fullback and he immediately turns a defence, it's a great ball to have that. And I don't think we do that well enough, because I think it's always that back to a fullback, or if it came in from a left or a right back, back into him again, then the ball goes forward, the defenders are back in shape. Glenn Whelan took responsibility a couple of times last night and recognised that first time turn ball was on. So in answer to your question, who would you have in that position? I think there are players that can do it, but if we're going to go with a sitter and two advanced in a 4-3-3 way, then that type of player might not necessarily be fitting into that system. It might be you're going to have to have runners that play ahead of Glenn, but there has to be a responsibility to take the ball, and it certainly hasn't been there from anyone that's played in advance of Glenn Whelan, whichever system's been played.
Mm. What's the Doherty Coleman dynamic now?
It was excellent, wasn't he, Matt Doherty? Take the goal aside, and he held his hands up. Niall was actually quite critical on Darren Randolph on the goal. And if you look at his starting position, I'd say probably fair enough. He was on the 6-yard box or just outside the 6-yard box breakaway when he scored his goal. But I think the responsibility would probably be with Matt Doherty, that he should have at least blocked him, tracked the run, whatever he should have done. But I think you can make a strong case for Doherty. The way he played last night, how comfortable he was on the ball, getting attacks forward, certainly in the second half progressed, he was superb. And he deserved his goal probably, because his performance, and you just felt for him that the goal was probably his fault, and he did take responsibility for it, because his overall performance was tremendous.
How much of the good parts of the Irish performance were down to a Denmark team who had two important players injured early on as well, but a Denmark team who arrived in Dublin knowing a draw was just fine, they didn't have to win the game, they were comfortable? To what extent did they just let us have it in front of them? How much do you think the good parts of the Irish performance were down to a Denmark team who didn't need to win?
There's probably an element of that. Yes, of course there is, but there was still enough quality on the pitch. And I mean, you look throughout their side, and they have got good players. But Joe, you know, I harped on about it beforehand, and I harped on about it so often. How they beat us 5-1 in that playoff game 2 years ago, I don't know. I still can't get my head around that result, because although they've dominated possession, and they did outplay us over in Copenhagen earlier on in this campaign, other than that, they haven't. And they're not a great side. They're not a side that would intimidate me in any way, shape or form. They're quite a long ball side. You're talking about them playing through the thirds and everything last night. I don't see that from Denmark. Whenever I've seen them, they hit so many long diagonal balls, whether it'll be to Paulsen or Braithwaite. They like to go direct into Cornelius as well. That's how they play. They're very much a functional team that are difficult to beat. And that's why they've got the record that they have, that unbeaten run that they're on, because they're so hard to beat, but they're just not necessarily a good footballing side.
Okay, well, let's accept that then, because then we need to take a step back and look at what McCarthy has done here. That's actually quite damning, if you think that they've qualified ahead of us. And if there wasn't this safety net...
But they're a solid functional side.
Isn't that McCarthy's MO, though? You know, I mean, if we're not more solid and functional, what's McCarthy imbuing the team with?
I think we're a solid and functional side. I'd say we're 50-50 with Denmark. That is where we are as a team. Mm. They've got good players, as we have got good players, but that is where we are. We're a functional side that is difficult to beat. And we don't necessarily have real flair players in the final third. We don't necessarily have a real goal scorer. You see David McGoldrick last night, the position that he kept on taking up, he kept on coming deeper because he has the quality to do things that other players can't. Yeah. But when that ball was going into the area, who's the one that's seriously going to go and get between the middle of the goals, right in the heart of the 18-yard box, is going to get a goal? And that's where we lacked last night, because although we did get a lot of crosses in, we had a lot of opportunities from distance, I would say. We didn't really have many clear-cut chances overall. Yeah. We had a few, but not many. And that's largely because of we have players like McGoldrick who wants to drop deep because he wants to make things happen, and he has the ability to do that. We need somebody else that's going to take responsibility to get a goal for us.
Yeah. Well, there is an argument there's more attacking flair on the bench, and he went for something solid last night. So, look, we couldn't beat Denmark last night.
I think, Joe, when Kieran Clark came on, I think that would have messed him. That, of course, when you get an injury with John Egan going off at half-time, that messed maybe his substitution up. I felt it was a flip of the coin. Harahan or Hendrick could have been taken off last night. I really did feel it was a flip of the coin. I thought those two in particular didn't reach the levels that we would expect from them, and haven't reached their levels maybe consistently throughout the campaign. Harahan, as I said, it was a 50-50, so he decided to drop Jeff Hendrick a bit deeper. Jeff actually probably looked a little bit more comfortable when he played a bit deeper, and he changed it obviously with Robinson. So that was an attack-minded substitution, bringing Robinson on.
Yeah.
And then Sean Maguire came on and actually played well. It was one of his best games that he's played.
Yeah, very good.
At that level.
Yeah.
So I couldn't question the substitutions, because Kieran Clark probably messed up his mindset in he had to make that substitution.
No, fair enough. Maybe you could argue, again, we had to win. There's an argument Maguire and Robinson could have been accommodated in the starting 11. But I'm trying to get to a clip here.
One or the other, yes. Maybe that's right. Maybe you do. But I think that solid approach that I think Mick probably had it in his mindset, we've got to be in this game at half time, that at least we're going to get to 60 minutes and we can actually go for it then. And
yeah.
Everyone always says to me, look, I'm a big advocate of making, you know, Mick's friend and all this rubbish that people would throw at me. But I felt as though there wasn't too much more that the team could have done last night.
Mm.
I think if that substitution, that forced substitution of Kieran Clark hadn't been made, I think we would have seen a Jack Byrne or that type of player come into the game that would have made a difference.
Okay, well, let's broaden this out then for a second, because I'm kind of trying to do that the last couple of minutes. So you look at that campaign, as I was saying, Denmark, okay, not a great side, but they've pipped us to the post, and the Swiss were probably always going to get through here. But ultimately, if there wasn't the safety net of the playoffs, we'd be looking at this group and feeling pretty miserable about things. Where is McCarthy's stock? Where is this team? O'Neill, for all the faults, and we've talked about them at length, they did pull out some big results. You know, they did. Mm-hmm. O'Neill and Keane managed to pull out the results we know about in Vienna and against Germany and against the Italians with the asterisks. It wasn't the full-strength Italian side. So they did manage to do that, and Mick hasn't quite managed to do that in a way he has previously. For instance, a sense of the debate or a sense of the talk. Damien Delaney last night was saying, you know, I don't feel good about it, but I wouldn't be against drawing a line under this now. March is a long way away. Let's give Stephen Kenny a chance, maybe a new man in. Gives it and added something to the team. That's not going to happen, I think, is the truth.
I don't agree with that assessment, but yeah, go on.
Yeah, well, that was his point of view anyway, and I figured you wouldn't agree. So even a sense of this morning on OTV AM, Kenny Cunningham alongside Jair, and Gary Breen was on, and, you know, Jair, as you'll hear, he was kind of wondering, well, so what has McCarthy done with this side? What is the style of play? What has McCarthy stamped on this team over the last couple of months? So just have a listen.
On a game-to-game basis, how is he trying to play football?
To win? What do you mean, how is he trying to play?
How is
he trying to make sure he's got seven games and eight goals, but
it doesn't. It's not exactly winning football. We scored seven goals. We had Gibraltar twice. We scored seven goals in eight games.
I know all that. But look how many goals. This is not a team that's full of goals as such. So he's making do with what he's got, and he's trying to make them competitive. But you're talking about ambition. What you've asked me.
Okay.
What's his ambition? His ambition is to get Ireland to the Euros.
Right. And on a game-to-game basis, how are we scoring goals?
Well, at the moment, a lot of them's been headers, isn't it? Crosses into the box. Kenny's saying about that. I think you've got this dreamy notion that as soon as Stephen Kenny comes in, we're going to be expansive, playing through the thirds, peppering the goal. Listen, I hope it's true, but he doesn't have a CV up to this stage that warrants suddenly thinking that that's going to happen with this group of players.
Well, his under 21 team played football. Dundalk played football. Everywhere he's gone, the teams have tried to play football, and
we're talking about what they've done. Yeah, yeah. You're talking about. Have you seen Mick McCarthy's teams play football? Have you? Are you just going on what you've seen there? Do you remember his team going to Holland and playing football, going to Portugal and playing football?
Yeah, Roy Keane.
I remember his team at Wolves. Oh, okay. So just Roy, was it?
No, Roy Keane was one
just
of the best.
Just Roy, yeah.
One of the best passers in world football was in his team at that stage.
Absolutely. He's a world-class centre midfielder. I know that about him.
Yeah,
but
that helps.
But he's encouraging us as a group. Of course it helps. If we had Roy now, I'm sure we'd be passing more.
Look, Mick
Sunderland... And then we might be showing more ambition.
Mick Sunderland team got relegated from
the philosophy.
From the Premier League.
Yeah, Mick Sunderland's team got relegated. I know that.
With a record low points total.
I know. I was in the team. Don't have to tell me. I was there.
What was your ambition? What were you trying to do?
I tell you what our ambition was. We had £3 million to spend when we got promoted. And when we were in after playing Chelsea, losing 2-1, he said that to Jose Mourinho. He cracked up laughing. He said, you've got no chance. And we didn't.
So rule number one is don't mess with Gary Breen. We can take from that clip. That's rule number one. But that kind of encapsulates the debate a little bit. You know, we're back to manager or the players. And you do want to be fair to...
Well, do you know what, Jair's
Mick,
argument,
but the results haven't been great.
Jair's argument there, though, when he said, when Gary was saying about, you know, how we played at various times, he talked about Roy Keane. We don't have Roy Keane. We don't have Robbie Keane. Clearly, we don't. No. And again, I'll go back to look at Denmark last night. Denmark are a pretty poor side. If they had Roy Keane, they would be a better team.
Sure.
So that argument is not really worth actually throwing into it, is it? I think in general... Mick's side, Mick has always wanted, and you forget that Mick has played different systems through his career. When I first came into the Irish setup, I was playing under 21s, three at the back, I was playing wing back, open and expansive football, trying to play through the thirds and everything. That's how Mick wanted to play. But Mick recognises how to get the best out of individual players. And we were fortunate that we had unbelievably technically gifted footballers in Hart, Ian Hart and Stevie Finn and Stephen Carr. Mark Kinsella, Roy Keane, Robbie Keane, Damien Duff, you know, we don't have that type of player. Mm. So I think it's unfair to make that argument about to throw up Mixer, how are we trying to play? I do really think that is unfair because last night, you can't tell me you're in the stadium, I'm watching the game, Joe. The atmosphere was electric and the crowd responded to what the players were trying to do.
Yeah,
I want the crowd leaving the Aviva Stadium happy, thinking we've been to a game. And to be quite honest with you, that's not happened too often at that stadium over the last 10 years.
No, it's true. Now, it hasn't happened that much in this campaign, we would say, but last night it did, for sure. And they'd probably tried to play to a fault, you know, is almost what was stuck out last night. It's going to be really interesting to see what Stephen Kenny does. That will settle
the debate. It is, and I think we're all excited.
Yes, we are.
We're all excited about what he's going to do. We've got a crop of youngsters that he's working with at the moment that you forget. Everyone thinks that Stephen Kenny's brought this 21s through. Tom Mullins had them at 19s, and the coaches that had this group of players before them, they have been successful through the system. Mm. It's not just because Stephen Kenny's got all them. Yes, Stephen Kenny's working with them, and it's great. But these have been developed within the system. We've known about this crop of players now for about 4 years. Mm. So it's not just now in the last three or four games that everybody's thinking there's a magic wand that's been dusted them. They're a quality bunch of players anyway.
No, I accept that. But there's no doubt they're playing a really great brand of football, and you have to give
Kenny. Cool, but did you see them play the 19s, Joel? They were playing a great brand of football in the 90s and in the 17s. Yeah. That's how they were playing. It's not just necessarily one man that's changed it with a magic wand. I genuinely hope that that is going to be the case with Stephen Kenny. And I think we will play a different way. But are we going to turn around after a campaign where we've won two games, lost three, drawn two, or whatever it's going to be, and we go, tell you what, we're playing good brand of football, we move on to the next campaign, and the next campaign starts, and we've lost the first game, and we're under pressure again, so we go through two campaigns, and we've not qualified, but we're playing great football, great stuff.
It'll be an interesting test case, because a lot of people text in and say they'd sooner lose playing a certain good brand of football, and we'll see if that's true.
Majority of supporters would always, the supporters you would have met over the years, Joe, we want to go to a major tournament. We want to go and enjoy ourselves in Paris. We want to go and enjoy ourselves in Poland or wherever it is. That's what we want in Korea, in Italy, wherever it is over the years of the tournaments. That's where the ultimate goal is, because that's where our supporters are going to get their enjoyment from it. Now, I'm in total agreement that I think we can play better. And I think that maybe the players at times have underperformed. Mick McCarthy would know that more than anyone. The players would know that themselves. But I'm probably like Gary a little bit as well. There's got to be a lot of repair work done on that squad if you're going to change the style of football so dramatically very quickly.
Yeah. So, okay, look, I'll let you go. You're very good with your time. We have the playoffs now. Now, beautifully for us, we don't actually need to win these games. We can just swoop in with our draws and win on penalty shootouts or something. So, they suit us perfectly. The perfect position where we don't have to win to get to the Euros. It's absolutely ideal. So, final word on this for the time being. Sum up that campaign then. Say we're back in the previous era. There's no playoff. There's no safety net. We've bombed out. We've not finished in the top two. Sum up that campaign.
I think that... Well, we probably would have been in a playoff if we finished third, wouldn't we? That's how it would have been for the Euros anyway. I think it's been a little bit of progression. There's certainly been a more up-tempo performances through this campaign than there was in the previous ones. I think there's a bit of life about the team. But I do feel, Joe, and I've said it to you, we talk about a lack of creativity in the final third. I think that lack of creativity only comes from our lack of responsibility in midfield. That is where we're lacking. I think if we improve our midfield play, we will be able to get further up the pitch. We'll get players in more advanced positions that are able to take chances in the final third. That's where our major problem does lie in midfield.
And Mick's responsibility in sorting that?
Yeah, I think Mick's responsibility and the players' responsibility together. It's a collective responsibility on how they're going to go and sort that problem. Look back at videos, watch videos, you know, simple things like I keep going on to you, taking the ball in the back foot, switching play, not necessarily condensing it the whole
time.
Passing forward.
You've been talking about our Irish midfielders, their first touch back towards goal for literally as long as we've had you on off the ball. And here we are, Glenn Whelan at times last night, admittedly under pressure at times, but we're still doing it. So, you know, you kind of wonder, well, how much work is being done? So that's the frustration. Anyway.
Yeah. I can sense your frustration, Joe.
Look, last night was encouraging, but you kind of wonder where it's been.
Yeah. No, I know. And I think certainly with that type of performance, with a little bit of added quality in there, I think we will be okay. And I think we've maybe been, the players have been sold short a little bit with what's been said about them. We don't have this, we don't have a player. I think we've got players who have been underperforming. I do think that players that haven't necessarily been able to take responsibility. So I would be hopeful that, look, what's Mick had now? Eight games that we had in this group, was it?
Wasn't it? Yeah.
So we've had however many games we've had through the group.
Eight games, seven goals.
Yeah, eight games, seven goals. It's a poor return. It is a poor return. We can't get away from that, particularly at home when you look that we've had Gibraltar twice and you look what the other sides have done to Gibraltar. It's pretty damning. But I think it's where we are, and I think there is probably more to come from that squad of players. But also, I think there's also an added responsibility for everybody to maybe watch back a lot more and see the mistakes, the fundamental mistakes that are being made.
Okay. Listen, great stuff. Thanks so much.
Well done, Joel. Cheers, pal.
Paddy Power and the Football Show. The greatest football partnership since Diouf and Heskey.
Now then, welcome back. Ireland under-21s 2-1 up against Sweden. That's at the Tala Stadium. They were 1-0 down. They are 2-1 up with 20 minutes to go. Meanwhile, Wales 2-0 up in Hungary, closing few minutes there, which means Slovakia-Ireland in March beckons. And we'll turn to Ireland now. 1-1 draw last night, obviously. We had commentary of the game here. Nathan Murphy was on duty alongside Damien Delaney. And Nathan Murphy, what a treat to have Nathan Murphy in studio.
Wonderful to be here, Joe. Another evening spent together. Will it be as enjoyable as the last?
Well, how enjoyable was last night is the question.
It was sort of as enjoyable as expected. Ireland had a lot of effort, a lot of energy, not a huge amount of quality at times. Mm. Left it all out there. But I'm not really buying this, you know what, we dominated Denmark. We had them on the ropes. We played well, particularly after half-time. We came out of the blocks properly, had them on the back foot. But they, by and large, looked pretty composed. Most of our best chances came from set pieces, which they didn't deal with them particularly well, caused a little bit of chaos, got the crowd up again and again and again through those corner kicks and the free kicks. But in open play, I thought Denmark were pretty much playing the game at their own pace. In fact, on opportunities, as we pushed men forward before they got the goal, they never pushed it.
No.
Eriksen just slowed things down. Rather than actually playing in a sort of frantic pace, let's go in for the kill, it was, let's just make sure we don't get caught losing the run of ourselves.
Yeah.
You could see they were well drilled by Aga Harida too. Lads, if they push men forward, let's not get caught on a break with six men. They turn it over and we're caught out.
Yeah.
So it was good without being great.
Yeah, I tend to agree. It was a very odd Christian Eriksen performance as a brief tangent, by the way. He didn't play like a man in desperate search of a goal. He was playing within himself, which maybe was Denmark in a microcosm, because all game to me, I thought they played like a team who at any current moment were going through. They weren't pushing it at all. They didn't need to push it at all.
No, there was the final, probably injury time.
Yeah.
It maybe got out of their control a little bit just because it was so frantic and anything could happen.
10 players up front as well.
We decided to play Shane Duffy up front and Alan Brown as a centre-half or a sort of quarterback firing long-range passes. But aside from that, only for something sort of freakish happening, you didn't really see us winning the game.
No. So we're going to play you Brian Kerr, who was talking to Nathan at full time. We also have Damien Delaney, who was on commentary with Nathan. He's going to be there. He talked as well at full time. We might just start with Mick McCarthy. We haven't played Mick on the show yet this evening. So here's a general sense of Mick's press conference. By the way, he's spiky in this press conference. I haven't been to a Mick press conference in a couple of months, really. I just thought I'd pop the head in and see. And maybe this has happened over time, or maybe it's post a certain game. You might know better. But there is a marked difference in Mick McCarthy now as opposed to when he started here. There were very few questions that didn't get short shrift, actually, including one from me, which I know you would have enjoyed. but generally, I thought, geez, this is spiky.
Yeah, I think since they've came back for the new season, so the last game before the break, Denmark away, get the 1-1 draw, 10 points in 4 games, everyone very happy with life.
Mm.
Since then, I think the praise for Stephen Kenny has gone through the roof. And Mick McCarthy's probably got a little bit frustrated with that of, well, he's working with the 21s.
Mm.
It's fine. I'm leaving his best players with him. And we've been doing all right as well. But the performances, obviously, last month sort of just took the momentum out of everything.
Mm.
And the fact he doesn't have time to turn it round. So he could easily be going, we get through the playoffs, we get to the Euros, and we'll try and kick on for a World Cup campaign. But because he's judged in such a short spell, I think he has. The entire deal, I suspect, has probably started to just piss him off a little bit.
Yeah, it's very possible, isn't it? Anyway, here is Mick.
Mick, how easy is it to use the conviction and self-belief the player should get from a performance like that and bring it into future games in March?
Well, everybody's asking me about the Denmark game when we lost 5-1. And apparently that was the first. We've played them 7 times, we've only lost them to them once. It has no bearing on it. They'll all go and play for the clubs Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, and they'll all play up until March. And you know what? They'll come back and we'll be playing a different team and we'll get them back in and we'll work on them and we'll try and get that kind of performance out of them. I think you believe we're very shallow and very, you know, not mentally tough. We have bad performances and bad results all the time. You've got to come back and play well. You've got to get back in it. As simple as that. And they've done it. They've been terrific tonight, so delighted with them.
Mick, the goal came very shortly after you'd made that attacking substitution to go and really go after the game.
That absolutely nothing to do with it, let me tell you, because it comes from a throw-in and a pretty simple cross in our box. We shouldn't have conceded.
Must have felt like a real sucker punch when at that stage you really had the mindset to go after the game.
Ah, look, it's always a kick in the nuts when you concede. But even more so when you're trying to do a positive substitute and try and get something out of the game, or trying to win the game. But the subs, again, whoever comes on, I thought they were great. They really contributed.
And just speaking of the subs, John Egan's replacement at half-time denied you a chance to maybe throw on an extra striker just at the death there.
Behave yourself. At half-time? At half-time?
Yeah, you were denied. You'd run out of substitutions for the final push, so I was just wondering.
I had a centre-half injured, and I replaced him with a centre-half because it was nil-nil, and I wanted to get it as long as I possibly could. So if that's you thinking that I should do that, then...
It's nothing to do with what I'm saying, actually.
Sorry?
It's nothing to do with what I'm saying. I'm just saying that when it came to the crunch time in the game, you had run out of substitutions, so it was just a bad luck.
What can I do? I can't do about that. You know, it was the difficult. John Egan gets injured and he's got to come off. But it was always going to be... You know, I tried to jig the subs as well so I could have to keep hold of one in taking the subs that I did and putting the shape of the team that I did. And Glenn Whelan, who was excellent, then had to come off, and we were winging it completely at that stage. But, you know, John Egan's injured, I had to replace him with a centre-back. It's just unfortunate. They had two, didn't they? They had two came off.
Mick, you said there that you weren't clinical enough. Do you think if we perform like that, the goals will come?
More chance of coming if we play like that. Come on, we're not... How many goals we scored? Seven out of eight games. That's quite clearly not clinical enough. But we don't get beat in too many games, and maybe a little bit of luck, maybe a little bounce of the ball at the end, we nick it. Who knows? I think we, had we nicked it, I think we'd have deserved it, to be honest.
Joe?
Mick, it was very noticeable that the team tried to play it from the back. A couple of occasions, Randolph probably found himself under a bit of pressure. Were you happy to see them do that? Did you ask them to do that? Or were you saying, just get rid of the bloody thing?
You are winding me up, aren't you? They played exactly the way I asked them to play, the way that we've asked them to play. And we've got a beautiful surface out there to play on. We had the two sitting midfield players that could bounce it off and play it. And that was the plan, and that's how it panned out. But I can assure you, there'd be no team of mine that just do either what they want. And no. That's how we planned it and coached it and worked on it. And it worked well.
So that was Mick. Sense of Mick last night. I just thought, you know, even the question early on where I'm not even sure who it was, but he was making the point, and it was just a very soft point that he wanted Mick to expand on, where he was saying, well, having to make that defensive substitution at halftime, John Egan off, injured, that robbed you of the chance to put on a striker later on. And I understood in the room at the time that's what the question was, but Mick, I think, was just in a space where he was feeling a bit defensive and maybe has been of late and jumped down the throat straight away and seemed to think the question was, should you not have put on a striker for the defender or something? You know, because saying, well, I had an injured centre-half, of course I was putting on a centre-half.
It was nil-nil at half-time. What else did I do?
And I think he took my question as almost, did the team in a Paris 2009 way
decided we're going to start playing a bit of football from deep,
throw off the Mick McCarthy shackles, and I was almost trying to catch him out, and really I was trying to get a sense from him, did he think that was working, were they comfortable? It's obviously hard in a press conference, you don't have a chance to clarify things always, but at times, geez, it was heart in the mouth stuff in the stadium, like it wasn't a comfortable effort at playing out from the back, so I was wondering, did he think it was working well, did they want to keep doing it, and obviously he took it as a, well, of course they play that way because I told them to play that way. So that was, I thought, the air of the press conference.
You've justified yourself well there for your question,
I think. Now, shoot me down. Maybe the question made no sense. Like, maybe it was a weird question.
I think the question was fine. You often wonder with managers in these press conferences what they want from them. So if you ask a stupid question, they throw their eyes up to heaven. If you try and ask a question about something that's actually happened, like, why are you trying to read so much into it? So there's no winning quite often for journalists in these, and people wonder why they don't get good answers, because managers don't want to give them.
No.
Like, the job wears everybody down.
Sure.
Everybody, it seems, ends up in this crankiness towards the end of their reign. His has obviously come around quicker. I don't know why I thought it would be differently. Obviously, that's not the big McCarthy we saw a year ago. There's still moments there. There's still flashes of a smirk and a little bit of a joke at times. I sort of thought, because he knew it was a short-term reign, that he'd be able to park the frustrations and go, you know what, I'm going to give my all for this 18 months and whatever happens, happens, but so be it. Yeah. But like, I don't know what he was expecting. Like, that we'd all pat him on the head and go, ah, well done, Mick. You gave it your best shot. Yeah. You didn't qualify, but sure, on we go.
Yeah.
Roll on to the playoffs. That's not, and he should know that better than anybody. He's been there. That's not how Irish football fans react. Maybe we are a little bit too extreme at times in how we analyse games, but we didn't qualify. We won 3 games out of 8, 2 of them against Gibraltar, a 1-0 win against Georgia with a brilliant free kick from Conor Howerton. We haven't scored any goals. And even the way he said there, oh, a little bit of luck, bounce of the ball at the end, who knows, it might have been different. In a way, and he may admit this himself, if you'd said to Mick McCarthy at the start of the campaign, you know what, Mick, 5 minutes to go, it's 1-1 at home against Denmark, and we have them on the back foot.
Yeah.
Would you take it? Probably go, you know what, maybe we get a bounce of the ball and it'll all work out. And, yeah, and I think that's where a lot of the debate comes from over the last 24 hours of, like, the Stephen Kenny thing's never going to happen.
Yeah.
But what is our footballing philosophy? Is it we fight bloody hard, we grab good points away from home, and we pray to God that we somehow nick a victory somewhere along the way at the Aviva Stadium, rather than, actually, you know what? You come here, we're going to be the better team.
Yeah.
We're going to be a technically good side who you're not going to get the ball off. It was possession last night was 50-50.
Yeah.
But it feels like Ireland had 60-70% of the ball, because we're so not used to having Ireland actually having a little bit of possession. Now, a lot of it didn't go anywhere. And a lot of the time, particularly in the first half, Denmark were more than happy to let Shane Duffy, and particularly Shane Duffy, I think, have possession of the ball.
And any time they did try to press us, they bloody did press us. Like, the little triangle of Glenn Whelan and the two centre-halves were just moving steadily back closer and closer to Randolph. And they ended up almost on the end line, and Randolph booted the ball. And one of the reasons I was, again, asked that question was because we have not seen the team try and play like that in such a concerted way across this campaign. I can't remember a game where they really have. And Damien Delaney was looking at it.
I think.
And even off air, he was saying, this just looks off the cuff. Now, it's very noticeable Mick said there, this was planned in training, we were meant to play like this. But Delaney was firmly of the opinion, this looks off the cuff to me, because you've Glenn Whelan taking the ball, you've Howerton somewhere over near the touchline, and you've Jeff Hendrick, who, by the way, didn't look like he wanted the ball all night. I think his confidence isn't great. But he was, you know, 30 yards away from Whelan, almost up alongside McGoldrick. And Delaney's point was almost, well, this is actually not how you play out from the back. The guy, when Glenn Whelan gets the ball, he needs an option or two ahead of him. And it seemed the only option Whelan had was, at best, the fullbacks beside him, or more generally, the two centre-halves. So what I'm very curious about in the future is to see, can Stephen Kenny give those same players a framework for playing out from the back? Because that is something he specialises in. You know, he's obsessed with things like, you always pass in front of the fullbacks, you always move onto the ball, this kind of stuff. You know, I know from having him here a couple of years ago, we talked about Ajax and how no square passes through the lines, all that stuff. So he's on top of that. And I can't wait to see if Stephen Kenny, giving these players that kind of a framework, actually turns us into a team who look like we're in control in possession. Because last night, when the Danes had the ball, they looked in control. But when we had the ball, the Danes still looked a little bit in control of the situation, because they were pressing us that way. And that jumped out at me last night, when you're trying to think, how good are these players? And we won't actually know the answer to that question fully until Kenny takes over.
Well, the 21s do that. The 21s do that all the time, play it out from the back. And I understand it's an entirely different level. And Kevin Caban was saying earlier, they've been doing it through Tom Moen. They've been brought up this way. So brilliant. Yeah. Firstly, that if that's the generation that are coming through, used to doing that. But they are also a quality of player that's below what's out there at the moment, in that none of them are barely playing senior football. And brought this up a couple of times of the game against Italy. Conor Masterson gets the ball off the goalkeeper, Caoimhín Kelleher, steps forward, nobody comes short, absolutely loses the rag with the central midfielders, that nobody's given him an option.
Yeah.
Plays that ball that we've seen Ireland play 100 times across to his other centre half, who goes back to the goalkeeper again, but then they play the exact same passage of play, back to Masterson, steps forward off the left of the back two, and this time Malumbi does come short, and suddenly they build it up and they put together 10, 15 passes moving further up the pitch. That's just not there at the moment.
No.
It goes from Egan to Duffy to Doherty, back to Duffy again, and as you say, we're stepping back further and further every time, to eventually it goes to Randolph. And I do wonder if actually the plan last night was what Ireland were doing when they were playing it out from the back, which was play to either one of the centre-backs who've dropped deep, or Glenn Whelan drops in between. He hopes that Christian Eriksen comes with him, which often he did. And then you just get back to Randolph, fire it forward, and at least you've got one less, or maybe two or three less, Danes there, and you win the second ball, which unfortunately...
And they did it. They did at times. You know, sometimes they would pump it up and they'd win a few second balls.
But part of the problem seemed to be that actually, because Darren Randolph ended up being so deep when he was receiving the ball, like he was pretty much on his goal line.
Yeah.
He couldn't kick it up over the halfway line.
On a standing start, almost.
And I think there was only one occasion when Glenn Whelan did turn. And he kicked it straight out of play because he turned, looked up, and didn't know where anyone was.
Oh, and to Steve, he should have given it to Stevens.
He should have given it to Stevens, but there was almost a... I've just turned, I've looked, is there a Dane near me? There's certainly no Irish jersey 10 yards in front of me that I can play a simple ball. Yeah. I just fired it out to Enda Stevens as quick as I can before something horribly happens.
Yeah, that was a memorable moment. Again, I remember Delaney gesturing as if to say, what is going on here? This is not... You know, so, but look, Mick says they worked on it. If that's them having worked on it, you'd have to say, then there is a question mark over the quality of player. But I can't wait to see when Kenny works on it, what we do in that department. By the way, mention of Stevens. I know Doherty's getting all the praise and he was very good. Gee, Stevens is a beautiful player. Really good technically. And always looks for a goal, Rick. You can tell they've been understanding. But really, really good player. We've got a brilliant back four coming through. If you think of if it's Doherty and Duffy, who looks more commanding every time he plays, and Egan grows into the role and look what he's doing at club level, and Stevens, that's serious.
And you've got backup in Coleman and Clark are two very experienced players. And I wouldn't be surprised if Kieran Clark puts a lot of pressure on John Egan over the next couple of years as well, because I think Clark played really well when he came on. Again, has that ability like Egan, very keen to step forward into the opposition half.
Yeah.
Defensively, we've been pretty much perfect. I assume conversations happen in training camps with Enda Stevens and John Egan, Dave McGoldrick, Callum Robinson as to what you do at Sheffield United, because it did seem a lot that Enda Stevens was playing a Sheffield United-style ball into David McGoldrick, who dropped deep.
Yeah.
It's just that at Sheffield United, everything is drilled to perfection, that the second McGoldrick drops deep, it feels as though five or six other pieces of the jigsaw all just fit together perfectly. Well, Whereas with Ireland...
They've loads of runners from midfield, Sheffield. You
know. And obviously they don't have as much time together. It's been a short term, but I just...
So what are we saying here? What are we saying?
I think we're probably pausing everything again, unfortunately, until March, which is a shame because... If things don't go well in March, it's going to feel like an absolute waste of 18 months. Mm. I think it was this night last year that we sat here, myself, yourself, Kevin Caban, Martin O'Neill had just left, debating what should happen next. And I still feel that that week was such a wasted opportunity for Irish football to just press pause for a second and have this conversation about philosophy and what we're trying to do and where we want to be, and realising the opportunity was there through these Nations League playoffs, that actually everyone talked, you're 2020, we have to qualify.
Yeah.
That's why we have to get the experience of Mick McCarthy in.
Yeah.
The way the Nations League set up, I know it's bloody complicated. Ireland could have lost every single competitive game for the last 18 months. Nations League, Euro 2020 qualifiers, and we'd still be in the exact same position we're in right now. Mm. It was an absolute irrelevance, all those results, because it's so easy to qualify for Euro 2020.
Yeah.
And that actually, maybe the wasted opportunity will be Stephen Kenny could have had this year of playing competitive games. I know there would have been a pressure, and if things hadn't gone well, we'd be questioning it right now. But ultimately, we're in the same position. And that's the one thing that frustrates me when I hear so many pundits talk about, let's see what happens if Stephen Kenny wins two or three games during a campaign, you know, playing all that good football. We've just gone through a campaign winning three games. The previous campaign, we won three games.
Yeah.
With terrible football.
It's probably our base.
So why not just play, if that's the base.
Yes.
What is the harm in...
Yeah.
Because Stephen Kenny's coming in, all right, he's going to have probably, I think, Six Nations League games, but then he's into World Cup qualifiers, and he cannot be expected to qualify for a World Cup. That can't be the base.
No.
That's just a huge bonus. So I do feel that we possibly wasted a year.
It's a fair point, it's hard to argue with, and unfortunately, the rationale behind that decision at the time... Well, let's just say there was a lot going on with the CEO and the hierarchy of the FAI, and they were trying to stave off what felt like the potential of a mini revolution. And hence we got that weird Kenny and after McCarthy dynamic anyway.
Paddy Power and the Football Show. The greatest football partnership since Diouf and Heskey.